And you're being interviewed on Genesis of the Music with your host, David Porter. Now, do you remember our interview with 1988?
Yeah, one thing about that little collage, you know, Calling All Cars is the opening line of Book 4 in Finding His Wake that Joyce used from a W.C. Fields movie.
You're giving away my secrets here.
Sorry.
Well, you know, in that 1988 interview, I played it in 89, but still the Berlin Wall hadn't fallen, and you had predicted the fall of the Berlin Wall.
Yeah.
And you also talked about how Gorbachev was working for you.
Yep.
Well, why did you have to let Gorbachev go?
Okay, in February 1988, when the Axis landed, and I was on the Secret Council 10, and I was just a member. I wasn't chairman. But with the help of the Axis, we ran an election through the CKLN radio station. The Secret Council 10 didn't really know what was happening, but I rigged up the computers so that people could phone in the Secret Council 10 number in late February 88, and as a result of that, the results were rigged so that I won. Now, I ran against three other people, Prince Charles of England, a man named Romanov, who was the guy behind Gorbachev, not the Romanov Tsarist dynasty, not that.
No, the guy who got drunk and broke all the china.
Beg your pardon?
The guy who got drunk at a party and broke all the Tsarist china.
I think so. How'd you know that?
Okay. I'm very up on that Sovietology.
Prince Charles and Prince Turn-N-Taxis. And so I got control in late February, early March 88. And if you look at the chart on the first CD where it says Lockdown Bob Rule from 1990 to 2020, what happened is in 1990, Prince Turn-N-Taxis died. In 91, Gorby was gone. In 92, Prince Charles went down. He's not going to really become king. And that happened just after Time Again Productions released the first CD in April 22nd, 1992. So you had the three guys as hologramic effects disappearing on the world scene as we locked down Bob Rule. So I'm responsible for the dismissal of Gorbachev.
Gee, he was so good while he lasted.
Sorry, yeah, but, you know, moving at the speed of light, an appropriate image like in marketing doesn't have an effect very long.
Okay, question number two, and this is a multi-part question. Pick the one that you think is the best and most apt to explain. Okay, if history stopped in 1945,
yes.
What's been since, or is history what cannot be retrieved, or what has basically disappeared?
All right, first of all, the phrase, everything's disappeared, is a actual quote of a Madison Avenue executive in the late 80s, a sort of plaintive scream because they couldn't monitor and do their poltergeisting on the audience anymore. So that's the scream of an executive. Everything's disappeared. He meant the mass audience for the electric media. Which are the actors in the global theater. So that's one level of the meaning of everything's disappeared. The way I explained everything's disappeared was just played by you on Bob's Meteorology Squared. Now, what happened since 1945 is that linearity of history ended, and that was visual space, and after that you have simultaneous acoustic overlaying and interpenetration, summed up by the word tactility. And so what has happened is endless retrievals becoming archetypal. And that's explained in the liner notes to the first CD called Memo to Prince Charles, June 4th, 1987. So we could go into it, but I don't know how much time is. You respond to what I said if you want to pursue that further.
Well, it sounds to me like it's... Never mind.
Yeah,
I have a better question.
I'd like to keep referring to what I say through the show because it is a way of in-depth pattern recognition, so you have to keep clarifying. But if you use that particular topic constantly for over 10 minutes, then it wears out. You have to keep referring to it.
Well, I think it'll be better also if it comes up in the context of phone calls.
Yeah.
I have a series of questions here. Now, you can deal with them singly or as a group.
Another theme evoked by Everything's Disappeared. And this is expressed by Finding His Wake, which is the perfect portrait of our time and our century, is that all nouns have disappeared. Everything is a verbal process. So everything has disappeared also means that all nouns have disappeared. So you as a noun have disappeared, but you are wearing new environments. So Dave Porter is something that cannot be visualized.
I'm a process rather than a thing.
Yeah, but you're a process of the media technologies interpenetrating. So you are the television screen. You are automobiles now because you're inside the satellite proscenium arch.
Well, this is a nice thing about radio is I can be in everybody's living room at the same time without actually having to go there.
That's right. You're not in their living room. You're in their central nervous system. You're even past their ear. We are all in that erogenous zone, that electronic zone, which can't be visualized, but it's like we're all on the same phone line, intercom. So we are inside each other's heads right now, and the living room is inside you. So, you know, that's an inappropriate visual metaphor to say you're in the living room. You're trying to say what it is, but be more technical and say you are in everybody's head, and they are inside your head.
Well, maybe they can't, you know, I use the visual thing because that's what most people relate to. Maybe that's too pink.
Yeah, and no, that's the problem with verbal language. As a medium, spoken language does have immediate sensory references like what we see and hear. And so it's hard to mirror the post-verbal languages of the electric media. So, yeah, you got it. It's like T.S. Eliot said in Sweeney Agonistes, that old poem. He says, I got to use words when I talk to you. You can use that as a logo on your show in the future.
Well, it's something that Charles Ives said, too. If I use words, you'll understand exactly the opposite.
That's right. Now, that's good. Did you detect any Ives influence in Dave Neufeld's work on the CD you played today?
Well, the ragtime rhythms. I think rock and roll is closer to ragtime than it is to jazz.
Yeah. Well, Finnegan's Wake is rock and roll in print.
Okay, but that's still visual space.
That's what?
That's still visual space.
Oh, yeah, well, the last book was Ulysses, the last novel. Finnegan's Wake is not a novel. It is a re-mythizing of the visual space of the page as an anti-environment to the electronic vortex. So Finnegan's Wake gave us a way to see what we couldn't see anymore. That's why it's not something you read. It's something you study because it's in-depth and multi-layered. In other words, he retrieved the visual page as an archetype, and that's partly what we were saying what's happening since 45. We've had these archetypal fakes retrieved, but the genuine fake is Finnegan's Wake. All right?
Okay. I like this. Now, before we go to phone callers, let me remind people, you can call in at 985-5735, and you will be able to speak to Bob, but I want to take another 5 minutes or so. Now, let me just go through the series of questions here, and you can take them individually. Two calls already. Or you can answer them as a group. Now, these are the questions. What made the 50s the 50s? And what made the 60s the 60s? And there's two parts to that. The 70s the 70s, the 80s the 80s, and what makes the 90s the 90s?
Well, that's actually outlined on my memo to Prince Charles in the first CD.
Well, it's also in the second CD.
The charts are referred to in the second CD. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, it's also in the second CD.
Yeah, the two charts are on the second CD, and there's another kind of chart in the first CD. But basically...
Well, you mean the one where it gives the dates and the metamorphosis? That's in the second CD as well.
So. Yeah, you're right. That's on the back of the second CD. So all the charts are in the second CD if someone wants to avoid the first CD. But simply, the hidden ground in the 50s was black and white TV. So the effects of the mosaic image of a black and white TV screen begin to surface in all levels of world culture, especially in the United States, where the TV environment was set up first. So the 50s are a product of TV. The 60s are a product of color TV.
Well, which part of the first? There's actually kind of two sub-decades to the 60s.
That's right. Are you going by my chart?
No, I'm just going by my own experience.
No, that you are absolutely right. I'll refer to that in a second, but in general, black and white TV is the ground for the 50s. Totally different medium and effect is color TV in the 60s. And then getting into the 70s, the hidden ground is the computer, which created the two-bit world of yes-no wit. And the ground of the 80s is the satellite. Now, the satellite environment started in 1957. The black and white TV was by 52. The color TV was by the middle 60s, and the computer environment was starting to surface in the middle 50s. So when I stretch it out from 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, those are culture legs as collective populations assimilate the effects. So you're right, in the 60s, after the effect of black and white TV, which was the beatniks, all right?
All right.
And the Sputnik brought beatniks into the culture because they turned the planet into a theater. So therefore, the American dream became an art form. And that was the syndrome of going on the road. So the beatniks, you see, Kerouac wrote his book in the late 40s, early 50s. But it wasn't until 57 when the necessary collective psychological and sociological response was evoked to have a meaning for the book On the Road. And so it came out in 57, the year of Sputnik. Then black and white TV became an art form by 1960, and that was expressed with the Beatles. So the Beatles start to surface in the early 60s, punning on the beatniks. And then in 1965, color TV took away the Beatles and gave us the hippies, which was the tribal in-crowd, in a sense. The hippies were the post-Beatles. The Beatles were individuals. As a group, the tribal effect is starting, post-Elvis, but the hippies were totally anonymous retrievals of Paleolithic culture, which Terence McKenna is now a homeopathic retrieval of. Now, here's the division in the 60s. In 1968, satellite TV made the hippies into yippies. Paul Krassner and the scene that'll be at the Millennium Madness tonight will be a retrieval of the yippie effect, which was the satellite merging with color TV. And then the computer turned the yippies into yuppies. And so these trends, if I put dates on them, they are specific in the pop culture form, but as environments, their effects go over more of a decadal level.
Well, things take a while to mature. Do you think we were set up for Ronald Reagan and everything because of some things that were, it almost seems like in the 70s, and in sometime in the late decade of the 70s, if Reagan hadn't existed, someone would have come along to fill it, because we were almost set up for something like that.
Yeah, I did the setting up of that. You had to go through, hey, shut up, there's a guy laughing in the background here.
Well, you dog you, you're the one who's responsible for Ronald Reagan.
That's right. Now, see, the last phase, what comes after the yuppie? Well, the guppy. And the yuppie is the love child of the
they
computer
breed like
and
guppies.
The satellite. And the Reagan is, by 1981, you have the mixed corporate media as a retrieval, because everything disappeared by 1977. So the mixed corporate media of television, computer, and satellite, with an American twist, because the American environment was the world environment from the 50s on, had to be retrieved. So Reaganism retrieved that with the tweeze, and it was a manipulative satirical tweeze of a radio effect. So Reagan retrieved America of the 90s, but he really was a TV image, so he waved, and he also brought in Star Wars. So he was a curious amalgam of all the media after the collapse of the Solar government and the collapse of the Universal government. So he was the first American mythic stage retrieval, as explained in my chart. Now, I'm aware of these. What I'm saying is kind of jargonistic and is maybe hard to follow for a new listener, but the point is to tape it, refer to the charts, and go over it, and it'll make more sense later. So I'm just putting this on the record.
Now, one more thing. What is making the 90s the 90s?
Oh, that's Lockdown Bob Rule, and because everything disappeared in 1977, from 77 to 90, according to my chart, you have universal government warfare and visible and acoustic holograms. So pop culture is the effects of the hologram. The effects always precede the causes being the particular technology. When the technology becomes an environment and is used by the population in general, then it is environmental. But the effects of that precede the phase when something becomes environmental. So we've had the hologram effect from 77 to 90. In 1990 to 2020, you have, I should elaborate, for when everything disappeared in 77, you had a hologramic retrieval of everything from 77 to 90, and Reagan was the American version of that, and so were all the other leaders, Thatcher, Khomeini, Mulroney in Canada, the Chinese Revolution, and the Soviet Union, Gorbachev.
Sort of like
they
summer
were holographic
reruns.
Retrievals.
Sort of like summer reruns.
That's right, and they were holograms. By 1990, the hologramic retrieval has no more power, so we're disappeared to the second or third or nth degree. So we now have invisible retrievals, inaudible retrievals, where one individual represents whole collective mythic stages which were retrieved from 77 to 90. So that's why on the press release, various mythic, homeopathic. Now, a hologram is a hologram, but if you put the hologram into homeopathic invisibility and miniaturization, it becomes holeopathic. So a holeopathic is a hologram on a homeopathic level. And so the 90s feature holeopathic retrievals of the hologramic 77 to 90 period. And they are the enhancement of one individual who represents a whole collective mythic stage. And the general series of them are Rush Limbaugh, Camille Paglia, Bill Clinton, Terrence McKenna, Frank Zappa, Michael Murphy, Jerry Mander, Stephen Hawking, the Gulf War, a retrieval of World War III as a holeopathic retrieval, very tiny and quickly accomplished, and Noam Chomsky. And all these guys and women represent mythic stages. For example, Rush Limbaugh is a retrieval, a holopathic retrieval of the conservative mythic stage, but it's all focused on him as the whole stage. His audience wants him to represent them. So the whole population is basically turning into a cult, a zombie cult as art form. They do it satirically, ironically. They celebrate the fact that they're celebrating one person. And that's what I think Bob's Mediacology, as represented by Tom Suchet's release of it, Bob's Mediacology is a holopathic retrieval of Bob, of me, which I operated in Toronto from 87 to 91, so that I am the hidden holopathic environment, the one that's behind and satirizing all of them.
Let me ask you one more question. You got a quick prediction for the 90s? Well, the next two decades?
Lockdown Bob Rule, where his art form will be realized as the greatest art form of the 20th century, and beyond Joseph Beuys. Joseph Beuys in 1950 added a couple of chapters to Finnegan's Wake. Well, what I'm doing is beyond all holy offices expressed in the CD, which are McLuhan, Herbert Armstrong, Zappa, LaRouche, Dr. Peter Beter, Mae Brussel, Finnegan's Wake, Cosmic Awareness, Garrett Keane, and Club 22, all these important holy offices in themselves will be encapsulated and expanded upon in retrospect as a quite a subgenius, I hate to use the word, but a subgenius operation expressed through me. So you're talking to the greatest artist alive, and I don't mean that as a boast. It's a fact. I'm also the greatest scientist alive. And anybody want to talk about that, they ask me about the D-cell.
Is that what Bob Rule is?
Lockdown Bob Rule is the recognition. Since I locked down Bob Rule by 1990, and that's why turning taxes, Gorbachev and Prince Charles go down, the population for the next 30 years gradually realizes this fact.
Okay, one more quick thing, and then I want to go to some phone calls. Please hold on, callers. Okay, now you talk about a media fest.
Yeah.
Well, to me, TV and media in general seems always been geared to the lowest common denominator. And it seems that if I personally go on a media fest, that would be, to me, like catering to this lowest common denominator. So why should I go on a media fest?
The media fest you just referred to for you was the content. The media fest refers to the mosaic television tactile mesh screen where the viewer is the screen. The effects of that have been around since the 60s, starting in the 50s. A media fest is understanding how each media phase, the computer, TV, computer, and satellites have disappeared, have no longer an effect on us. And the more we talk about this as content on the media, if we refuse to talk about any agenda, feminism, racism, ageism, sexism, conservatism, anything, if we, whenever we're interviewed in a public situation where the media wants a poll of our opinions, we just say, turn off television. Now, television is an old environment, but if we just do that as a cult form, as a zombie response on the public level, I'm not asking you to turn it off personally. I'm asking you to use it as a content for the news, which is the word that makes the market. We use this ideology of turn off the media as a Chinese water torture to bug the hell out of the news people, which we're all supposedly controlled by and bugged by. And that, in other words, we consciously take one content idea and ram that back to the media programmers.
Well, this goes on to your definition on the CD of what a subgenius does.
Yeah.
Okay, let's take some phone calls. Let's see if I know how to do this. Okay. KPFK, you're supposed to be on the air.
Oh, J.R. Bob Dobbs. This is Robert Anton Wilson.
Listen, I'm not J.R. Bob Dobbs. That's Reverend Stang's personal tweez. I met Stang in the late 70s and only met him a few times in Dallas, and his book's an interpretation of me. I'm Bob Dobbs, not J.R. Bob Dobbs.
Well, you have to excuse me. I just am peeking on 2,300 micrograms of air.
Hey, man, you're not Robert Anton Wilson. You called in on his show the other night when he was on Roy of Hollywood, and you imitated and tried to mirror him back.
Well, I had this. I just dropped from the universe next door.
Okay.
Okay, but I just wanted to ask you,
Where are you staying? At Leary's or what house are you at?
No, I'm at the Motel 6.
Okay, so you're going to go to the Millennium Madness this afternoon?
Yeah, are you going to be there, Bob?
I think so.
Okay, well,
I want to help you accomplish your cosmic conspiracy game. I want to do a Manipian satirical twist, which might move it into a more amazing effect than you to produce.
I'll welcome it.
Now, I think your wrestling encounters are fine, but they need to be updated.
Okay.
You and Tim.
Well, Bob, I wanted to ask you, could you go into an explanation for the KPFK listeners of the Institute of Chaos Studies and the Moore Science Ashram in Ongpat, New Jersey?
Oh, no problem. This is William Irwin Thompson is the popularizer of the chaos theory. Ralph Abraham, James Lovelock, Lynn Margulis, and one other person are his mythic stages. Chaos is an attempt to visualize tactility. It can't be visualized.
Uh-huh.
So all the 20th century, from Heisenberg on down, have been trying to visualize the tactile effect of the central nervous system. The central nervous system is an extension of tactility. So chaos is a conceptual, not a perceptual mirror, conceptual rearview mirror image, and the point of Bob's ecology is that there is an order below this, not just a fractal repeating micro macro mirror image echo, mirror of the situation. It is something that involves us in a dance. So the Institute of Chaos Studies, whatever you just said, has to learn how to dance to tactility, not verbalize or visualize it. So therefore, science is obsolete, art is obsolete, so what are we left with? We're making sense right now. By us talking right now as you respond to me and I respond to you in a kind of interpersonal chaos, that making, which has no matching, we're making sense, is the reverberation when I say the word makes the market. We are making sense. We are making chaos and order at the same time, both and.
Okay.
Right now.
Could I read this little bit out of a pamphlet I got through the mail? It says, through the early to mid-80s, the commune's fortunes fluctuated, sometimes nearly flickering out.
Could you say that again?
Okay. Through the early to mid-80s, the commune's fortunes fluctuated, sometimes nearly flickering out.
Yeah.
Fard self-publicized a series of Xerox visionary recitals in which he attempted a synthesis of heretical and antinomian spirituality, post-situationist politics.
Not bad.
And chaos science.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm getting to the punchline, though. After the crash, a number of destitute Moors and sympathizers began turning up at the ashram seeking refuge. Among them were two young chaos scientists, recently fired from Princeton on a charge of seditious nonsense.
Yahoo!
A brother and sister, Frank and Althea Dobbs. The Dobbs twins spent their early childhood on a UFO cult commune in rural Texas, founded by their father, a retired insurance salesman who was murdered by rogue disciples during a revival in California.
David Koresh?
That's right. One might say that the siblings had a head start in chaos, and the ashram's modus vivendi suited them admirably. The Pine Barrens have often been called a perfect place for a UFO to land. So I just wanted to make contact with you.
Well, there's many, the images your words evoke will resonate with my stages. UFOs, that's the universal stage from 60 to 77. Now, from 77 to 90, when all mythic stages are attempted to be retrieved, that includes the extraterrestrial civilization that's going to make contact with us, and this is one prediction for the 90s. It will be from the booties. You're hearing this exclusively. The booty civilization is what is making contact and doing their earlier PR through the crop circles. But that is the universal stage. They're obsolete. That's why they're going to make contact with us. They feel kind of in a state of panic.
Okay. And last thing was, you know, you really have your rap down, finely honed. I mean, you know, just as tactful as me or Terrence McKenna.
Right.
But like a lot of the other guys out there, and I do have the Arise video, and a lot of them are just sort of like, they just don't got it, Bob. They're sort of geeky. They have sort of like an aura of like the kind of guys who got their ass whipped in.
Oh.
not it, Bob. They're just, they're sort of geeky. They have sort of like an aura of like the kind of guys who got their ass whipped in the locker room by jocks with towels.
Yeah, you mean the sub-geniuses.
Yeah, like a lot of them are just geeks. I mean, why don't they got what you got? They're just, a lot of them are just geeks. They don't have any stage presence. I mean, they can do it in print and material, and they can do it like in graphics and stuff, but as soon as they get up there on the mic, they're pretty lame.
Yeah, well, that's because the real inspiration for that geekdom is Stang, who's a geek himself. I like him personally, but there's no doubt he's a glasses-wearing geek, all right?
Yeah.
So he creates that effect through his personality. And it's only an interpretation of me. That's why... The pop magazines.
That's right. And, you know, I'm like Stang, Dr. Howell, and all those guys. I mean, I'm sorry, but they're geeks, and, you know, they don't have what you got. But.
Yeah, and I would say, to make it real sophisticated, is that verbality is so obsolete that they're very good at verbal raps and verbal visual graphics, but it's so, you know, ancient that it comes off as a nerdy kind of atmosphere.
That's exactly it.
Yeah, good.
Okay, I'll let you go, and I'll see you today at 2, and...
That's right, Robert.
I love talking to you, and I'll do it again soon.
Yeah, we can get in touch anytime Dave and his butlers.
KPFK, you're on the air.
Yeah, I want to know if Bob is going to be at the Millennium Madness event.
Yeah, I'll be there.
You will? Will you be in disguise, or will you be... obvious to us.
I'll be obvious.
The subgenius must have slack, and I now turn you over to the true slack master, the one and only Anti-Bob. Here, take it.
Here they come.
Yeah, the Robert Anton Wilson you had on a little while ago was an imposter, an impersonator.
That's right. You've got it down better than he has.
He's actually,
are you going to stand up for Stang? There's been photographs of you with Stang.
They're from Haiti. These
I confronted you in 1985 at the Toronto Metro Library with my colleague Bob Marshall. I mentioned Mechanical Bride to you, and you said it was published in 1948. Wrong. Came out in 51. So I knew he didn't have the McClune stuff down. And you and Dr. Tim Leary, and don't forget, Tim Leary just related on a TV panel to Bob Marshall and Nelson Thal. You'll see that broadcast on Kitty Goodman's show. But there's the effect of the McLuhan reality coming into you and Tim. So go ahead, sorry.
Now, wait a minute. I got lost in the middle of all that.
Well, you remember being in Toronto in 1985?
What we're doing is the Millennium Madness is a fundraiser for Vlad. That's the Vampire League Against Defamation. We are trying to achieve civil liberties for the differently animated and the... hematologically challenged.
Yeah, you mean virtual reality?
No, this is an old Transylvanian. It's descended from the Order of the Crimson Chalice.
Listen, have you read Eric McLuhan's thesis on the 10 Thunders of Finnegan Wake? It's Menippean satire. It would update your Menippean satire attempt of understanding Finnegan's Wake. You know, Finnegan's Wake is not about the Irish. And you concentrate on the Dublin references, but... That, as Joyce said, you don't have to know anything about Ireland to get into Finnegan's Wake. Anyways, back to your statement. You're operating this program and mandate today when everything's disappeared? How can you use any nouns?
Well, we try to avoid nouns. The differently animated and the hematologically challenged living in a... we already have a... people crusading for the unborn. It's time we had a real crusade for the undead.
Yeah, for the human scale. You want to retrieve the anthropomorphic human scale, which is the general mood expressed on my second CD. I explain the revival of the bodies as we normally know them, created by the first nature. But we have to recognize the effects of the second man-made nature to retrieve the humanological. You represent a Western wisdom generator on a human scale. You're accessible to all ages.
Well, as I found the contract here was said, hey, hey, ho, ho, hemophobia has to go.
Yeah. Okay, now let's continue.
We agree on something.
Where are you staying? Where are you living right now today?
We've got him secluded in a secret underground chamber.
Yeah, but you're not there right now. You're on the air. You're in Dobbstown, the electric discarnate presence. So
we're over in the antimatter universe where nothing matters.
The percept of where you are right now, you are in my head, I'm in yours.
Well, I guess that's true, too.
So, you know, you guys do your homework. I mean, it's fun to have retrievals of communal excitement and hallucination and surrealistic humor, but let's do our homework, then we could really get funny.
Well, this is a secret communique to you, Bob Dobbs, and I hope you take it to heart. There's a plot to neutralize you.
That's run by Tom Touché, my ex-butler. That's why I'm on the air, because those CDs were ripped off from my radio show and put out. I had nothing to do with the CDs. I'm aware of Tom Touché's plot.
Okay, well, I'll let somebody else have a crack at you.
Yeah, okay.
Well, actually, there's no one else. So if you want to call in at 985-5735, 818 area code. I'm speaking.
Well, we certainly know the significance of me being on the air of May 29th. May Brussels' birthday, John Kennedy's birthday, and John Hinckley's birthday today. And it's interesting that Wilson and these guys have picked up that date for this day. But certainly, I'm kicking it off. I'm here on this day, and the two callers are from Robert Anton Wilson. That should tell you something, Dr. Beter.
Well, why are you off the air in Toronto? Is that a personal choice?
Yeah, that's part of lockdown Bob rule, is that I had to move into a more public global figure effect. So the operation in 88 to 91 was just to create the lockdown of the Secret Council chairman position. And as I move public from 1990 on, then I move out of the locality of Toronto.
Okay, well, this is KPFK Los Angeles. I'm David Porter of the program's Genesis of Music, and I'm speaking with Bob Dobbs, and we have another caller. Go ahead, caller.
Hello, Bob. I was interested if you had ever heard of a press called Incunabula Press, which specializes in a lot of material on chaos, esoteric pamphlets that never made it to publication that are Xeroxes. And I was handed this Xerox of the catalog by a friend, but there's no address where you can order the books.
I could say that I created that press, but actually it was done by Tom Touché. And if you write to Toronto, Time Again Productions at 1 Yonge Street, Suite 1801, in Toronto, zip code M5E1W7, they will send you that catalog.
Okay, great. All right, thank you.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Dave, I have a question from Roy of Hollywood. If there's no callers,
there's one caller here.
Hello.
Well, what's the question, Bob?
Who am I talking to?
Well, you're talking to both of us right now. Hold on. What's the question, Bob?
You're talking about the significance of the today, which I didn't realize, May 29th.
May Brussels' birthday? The late May Brussels was born on May 29th, 1922. John Kennedy was born on May 29th. And John Hinckley was born on May 29th. So the cosmic conspiracy game put out by Roy and Tim and Robert Anton Wilson is resonating with something in our deep unconscious.
Was that
because
the question?
Remember, Robert Anton Wilson, in his earlier book, put down May Brussels, and in the late 80s, he's using May Brussels, Penny Lernew, Vatican CIA cocaine connection information that May Brussels sort of epitomized by 1982. So there's a deep karmic reflex here from May.
Was that the question?
May works with me, and that's part of the significance, that Robert Anton Wilson has to atone for what he said about May Brussels in his earlier Illuminatus book.
Was that the question from Roy?
Okay, what was the question?
No, I want to know who you are. Well, you get your books, and I'm not familiar with May Brussels, but it got me thinking about the Lapinka bombing and
Christie Institute, yeah.
And I was wondering if you'd wanted to comment on that, on the Christie Institute and the fact that it's the anniversary of the bombing and all the people that now...
A good point. Very good. I had forgotten that, but I did notice it at the time, May 29th, 84. You're right. That's May Brussels, another resonating thing. Very good, Christie Institute. Well, if you read my book, Fatic Communion with Bob Dobbs, which is available from Time Again Productions, there's a biography of myself, and the basic nuclear terror ended with the help of Dr. Beter in 1982. And after that, you had hologramic reflections of the old factions, the Vatican versus the Queen, outlined in that newsletter of the project, A. Albionic Research. And I think that the Christie Institute were duped as a channel for one faction in that battle, but it would never lead anywhere, as exposed by the Contragate hearings and the fact that Norris and these guys walk. It was a retrieval of a battle from the 60s and 70s therefore had no real legal force to end up in court and to create a revolution as Mae Russell wanted through the courts. These things can't happen after 1982, so the Christie Institute was a retrieval of the top-down emphasis in society. The battle between the top-down factions swallowed and subsumed by the mythic government lockdown from 77 to 90, which is a bottom-up process. Sorry for the jargon, but I'm not always on the air, so I got to lay this out. This is meant to be studied and researched, what I'm saying. I'm talking science here. These are technical answers when I give them.
So okay, let's go to another caller. KPFK, you're on the air.
Hello, Bob.
Yes.
Yes, I'd like to ask two questions. Are all the media critics who put down the Wild Palms series all Pink Boys?
They certainly are. That Wild Palms was based on the battle between the McLuhan Center, evoked by Nelson Thal and Bob Marshall, the very weekend that series started. It was about the hero, what was his name, Jim Belushi, versus the Leary-based, Scientology-based character, Senator Kurtz. That was an immediate example of complex clairvoyance, where the interplay that weekend between Leary and Thal and Marshall, that's going to be broadcast in the Kitty Goodman show, was manifested in movie video form the same weekend. And remember, Wild Palms refers to masturbation also. All right? Palming it, palming your private parts. TV is the thinking man's masturbation. So there's the relevance of that. You're right. So the critics, they never know, but the critics have to wake up private opinion in American culture, so they have to be anti it regardless of the meaning of it. So they give the consumer of newspaper movie reviews a sense of private identity, an illusion, a genuine fake, that helps them react to the environmental effects of Wild Palms. You get it?
Oh, yeah.
But Bruce Wagner, I heard him on KCRW through my constant surveillance of American media on Thursday night on the Lisa Somebody Show. His talk and the tone of voice were such pink that I knew he channeled the whole thing and didn't really know what he created. But that's not unusual when you have complex clairvoyance in the Secret Council of Ten. So I know that Leary watched Wild Palms. He knew what it was about, as much as he could. And the neat thing about Leary is he's promoting Marshall McLuhan now because he realized Marshall explained the 60s to the 80s the best of any of them. The politics of ecstasy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, my second question is, perhaps you can, not to feel too weak or anything, but could you tell us, let us in whether or not Hillary is one of your agents or an agent of the anti-Bob?
There's noise in the background. One of my agents or who?
Or an agent of the anti-Bob.
Okay, now you've got a key. I'm going to tell you something amazing. First of all, Bill Clinton is the holopathic retrieval of the Democratic Party. And he is getting lost in the ratings battle between all the other holopathic retrievals. But the actual emphasis of Hillary Clinton as a person involved in health reform directly reflects to the real part of Bob's rule of lockdown manifested by my wife, Connie. Now, my wife, Connie, has the appropriate modality for AIDS, and Hillary Clinton will be responding to that. So I see Hillary Clinton as a pink version of Connie, but when she meets Connie, then Hillary will be made, at least unconsciously, into a subgenius, and we're going to have real health reform, not the bureaucratic, state socialist-controlled form that she thinks she's implementing.
Bob, I have a question. Who is Bob Dole the holopathic retrieval of?
Bob Goldthwait?
Bob Dole, the senator from Kansas.
Well, he's a holopathic retrieval of the radio era, World War II, which is the Reagan aspect and the Rush Limbaugh audience. Remember, nothing old under the sun. All these ancient modalities can be retrieved in the 90s.
Okay, I've got one more.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, let's see. Who am I a holopathic retrieval of? Take it, Bob.
Hello.
Take it, Bob. Who am I a holopathic retrieval of?
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were referring to callers as holopathic retrieval of. Who am I a holopathic retrieval of?
Me, on this end.
David.
Oh, you?
Yes.
You are Well, you are lumped into KBFK, which is a homeopathic retrieval of human scale, a semi-literate TV generation, the fake left is built. Hey, Bill Mitchell, the fake left, that's a homeopathic retrieval. That's
by the way,
sir.
By the way, that...
But I know you have a bit of manipian satire on yourself, and you don't like to present yourself as part of that. You were inside the environment, so you can't escape it, but I appreciate the valiance of your effort, Dave, not to be tagged with that effect.
By the way, that comment of Bill is going to be recapitulated on his second and upcoming appearance on Orange County Cable. So let's go to another caller. You're on the air.
Yeah, good morning, Bob Dobbs.
Oh, Tariq.
Give us a little explanation of the top-down identity power bureaucracy.
Thank you. Tariq, do you think that was Robert Anton Wilson, the second caller? Did you hear him?
The second caller sounded like him, yeah.
Yeah, and I want to say that to Robert that you did not respond to Tariq's questions that accurately, and as you notice in you hear the tape of the show, Tariq sounds a little disappointed as he hangs up. But that's why Tariq is a some genius, and he's working for me. And people like Ned, angry at you, Robert, for talking about caller to get Valium and things like that. This kind of insulting on the fake left anthropomorphic retrieval of the Celtic wizard modality is something that doesn't wash totally in the electric environment because you're talking to all types of people. So you got to be all points of view.
Sure.
So, Tariq, you want me to explain the chart?
Yeah.
And this is the chart in the second
down
CD.
Identity power bureaucracy.
It starts off, well, what could I say? It's a big chart. What? Give me an angle on
it. Okay, start with the...
Solar government?
The global village.
All right. The global village is a product of visual space or the manuscript culture. The difference between the West and the East is the effect of the phonetic alphabet. So the manuscript culture of both the East and West had a twinge of difference and logic sequential thought orientation in the West due to the effect of the phonetic alphabet. And in the medieval period, the West was unified by the language of Latin. So it was a global village in the medieval period. But when the printing press came in, it evoked the national extension and expression. Now, I have in the chart, the secret government in the phonetic alphabet period is the Illuminati. And that is the oligarchic families who can still be found in Italy, the Roman group. They're the ones who killed Christ.
Right.
And then that generally has ups and downs. When the phonetic alphabet disappears and the papyrus is cut off, I won't say the phonetic alphabet disappears. When papyrus is cut off by the Egyptians by 400 AD, then that kind of Illuminati center margin control diminishes, so we move into what is called the Dark Ages, which is acoustic culture. And you notice that Byzantium did not have a Dark Age because they were not based on the phonetic alphabet.
Right.
So that flourished. Byzantium flourished in the late, say, 700 to 1200, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Then we move into the effect of the printing press, which retrieves the Illuminati through price systems and the Fugger newsletter. So out of that...
The what?
The Fugger newsletter. You can read about it in my take today. It was the turn and taxis postal system that was the new medium of center margin control, and espionage was done through the postal system. This centered out of Venice, so that's 1500. Then when the electric age comes in with the invention and discovery and retrieval electricity by Ben Franklin, as the scientists start to develop, the effects start to appear before the actual electric environment of the telegraph in 1840. So as these effects surface, the Illuminati and the oligarchs start to panic, and they have to react to the printing press revolutions of France and America, and so they integrate the Fondo. Now, the Fondo is the accumulated wealth run by the chartered accountants of the royal noble families, not just the noble families we know of, but ones we don't know of. The accumulated visual space value of that pricing system wealth is called singularly a Fondo, and the plural of Fondo is Fondi. Lyndon LaRouche is the great historian of this process. The Fondi integrate as a corporation by 1840 under the decentralizing effect of the telegraph. All right?
Yep.
Then the world government, that is like a world government right there, but it's made official with the League of Nations in 1918. That is the end of the global village. The global theater is the electric environment that goes around the global village,
Global Village being the bankers in simple terms. When the banking situation collapses in 1929 due to the electric effect of radio and money freaks out and information takes over the currency, you then have a rapid series of control on the anthropomorphic nature level of solar government, that's sort of running the show from the moon, the laser beam level in 1960, where a new technology which is not an environment but is important for weaponry and secret intelligence superiority, secret intelligence factions, the laser beam is a government by the very fact it's invented. And then comes mass man, which is in 1977, the Illuminati have disappeared. They're still there as a historical medium of visual space, but in 77, when everything disappeared, they replay the image of popularity or the common denominator delimited by the polls or the poltergeist that is played back to the people from 77 to 90 as a form of control. So Reaganism was a mass man image. By 1990, the Illuminati, everything is disappeared again to the second degree, so the Illuminati is retrieved by me. And that's a quick, I'm just turning over the tape here, getting this on record. But that's a quick run through, but one has to look at the chart.
We're getting it on tape.
I think, Rick, you just wanted me to run through it for the benefit of others, since you already had it personally explained to you.
And also explain what...
Is that right? You had it personally explained to you before?
What?
You wanted me to run through it because you didn't need the answer.
No,
you wanted it put on the record because you had it personally explained to you privately.
Right, and I want the people to understand that.
Thank you.
And I also want to explain...
The manuscript culture. The difference between the West and the East is the effect of the phonetic alphabet. So the manuscript culture of both the East and West had a twinge of difference and logic, sequential thought orientation in the West due to the effect of the phonetic alphabet. And in the medieval period, the West was unified by the language of Latin. So it was a global village in the medieval period. But when the printing press came in, it evoked the national extension and expression. Now, I have in the chart the secret government in the phonetic alphabet period is the Illuminati, and that is the oligarchic families who can still be found in Italy, the Roman group. They're the ones that killed Christ.
Right.
And then that generally has ups and downs. When the phonetic alphabet disappears and the papyrus is cut off, I won't say the phonetic alphabet disappears. When papyrus is cut off by the Egyptians by 400 A.D., then that kind of Illuminati center margin control diminishes, so we move into what is called the Dark Ages, which is acoustic culture. And you notice that Byzantium did not have a Dark Age because they were not based on the phonetic alphabet.
Right.
So that flourished. Byzantium flourished in the late, say, 700 to 1200, all right? Then we move into the effect of the printing press, which retrieves the Illuminati through price systems and the Fugger newsletter. So out of that...
The what?
The Fugger newsletter. You can read about it in my
Poems
Take Today. It was the turn and taxes postal system that was the new medium of center margin control, and espionage was done through the postal system. This centered out of Venice, so that's 1500. Then when the electric age comes in with the invention and discovery and retrieval electricity by Ben Franklin, as the scientists start to develop, the effects start to appear before the actual electric environment of the telegraph in 1840. So as these effects surface, the Illuminati and the oligarchs start to panic, and they have to react to the printing press revolutions of France and America, and so they integrate the Fondo. Now, the Fondo is the accumulated wealth run by the chartered accountants of the royal noble families, not just the noble families we know of, but ones we don't know of. The accumulated visual space value of that pricing system wealth is called singularly a fondo, and the plural of fondo is fondi. Lyndon LaRouche is the great historian of this process. The fondi integrate as a corporation by 1840 under the decentralizing effect of the telegraph. All right?
Yep.
Then the world government, that is like a world government right there, but it's made official with the League of Nations in 1918. That is the end of the global village. The global theater is the electric environment that goes around the global village being the bankers in simple terms. When the banking situation collapses in 1929 due to the electric effect of radio, and money freaks out and information takes over the currency, you then have a rapid series of control on the anthropomorphic nature level of solar government, that's sort of running the show from the moon, the laser beam level in 1960, where a new technology which is not an environment but is important for weaponry and secret intelligence superiority, secret intelligence factions, the laser beam is a government by the very fact it's invented. And then comes mass man, which is in 1977, the Illuminati have disappeared. They're still there as a historical medium of visual space. But in 77, when everything disappeared, they replay the image of popularity or the common denominator delimited by the polls or the poltergeist that is played back to the people from 77 to 90 as a form of control. So Reaganism was a mass man image.
Mm.
By 1990, the Illuminati, everything is disappeared again to the second degree, so the Illuminati is retrieved by me.
Hmm.
And that's a quick, I'm just turning over the tape here, getting this on record, but that's a quick run through, but one has to look at the
actually,
chart.
We're getting it
right
on tape.
I think, Rick, you just wanted me to run through it for the benefit of others, since you already had it personally
right.
explained to you.
And also explain the what...
Is that right? You had it personally explained to you before?
What?
You wanted me to run through it because you didn't need the answer.
No,
you wanted to put on the record. Because you had it personally explained to you privately.
Right, and I want the people to understand this.
Thank you.
And I also want
okay,
to
what,
explain...
Any more?
Explain what is meant by only puny secrets need protection. Big discoveries are protected by public incredulity.
That's excellent. Basically, that's what Marshall meant by the medium of the messaging. The content wasn't important. Any information news, visual, acoustic, or graphic, is mere fodder and... baby powder that gets into the dust of the new discarnate man. So all contact, all information can never accomplish anything because it's inside the tactile mesh. And the very thing that I just explained, the top-down chart plus the bottom-up, are the real changes in mankind's history which people don't believe. They don't believe the medium is a message. They don't know that the television screen created LSD, a pattern of preference for inner tripping. They don't know this. So they're going to concentrate on who killed Bambi.
Godzilla. Let's take another call. Okay, caller, you're on the air.
Yes, reality is what you can get away with. I want to tell everyone to go to Millennium Madness today, and they can call area code 310-JFK-9393 and find out more information. There's going to be Robert Anton Wilson there, Paul Krasner, Jack Herrera, Timothy Leary, and it should be a good time. It should be had by all.
Yeah, we got any points to make? We already talked about this for 30 minutes.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, you're not listening. Well, we're actually going to get mad and turn you off. But you got a question quick?
No, I just wanted to make sure everyone goes to Millennium Madness.
Well, we already had Robert Anton Wilson talking to me. You might want to play the dialogue at the show.
Anyway.
Okay, I got to go to the next question.
Well, we don't have a call, so...
No, we do. Here's the Roy of Hollywood question.
Yes.
He wanted to know, he expressed on the show a couple weeks ago, he never understood the difference between television and movies. Marshall said there was a huge difference between the TV environment and the movie environment.
Would you say movies are more visual space than TV?
Yes, but they're not visual space. They are kinetic space. The visual space is the alphabet in the book, which is an extension of the eye. The movie is an extension of the eye and the foot. You travel outwardly, like walking, when you watch movies. When you watch television, you're witnessing the extension of the eye and the hand. The hand is a tactile medium. So that, on the sensory level, is a difference, but technically...
Well, wait a minute. I don't understand the thing of the hand. You explained the foot, so explain the hand.
The hand is the ability to rub and then let go. The interval, the ability to grasp and let go, which the arboreal apes, the tree-embedded apes, learn before they can get out of the jungle. It's the ability to hold and then let go and to juggle and relate all the matter around you. That's hand. That's tactile.
Well, how does that relate to television?
Television extension of tactile sense, it is obviously an interplay of sight and sound. We all know that. But for many people, these images evoke sounds, evoke smells and kinetic motion. So it is an interplay of all the senses. All right?
Okay.
But here's the key difference, is that when you watch a movie, You're looking at a medium that is light reflected off a wall.
Yeah, that's why I was wondering if it was related to visual space.
Yeah, it is slightly related to light, light on, or light reflected, as the light off the printed page is. But it is not alphabetic, it is ideogrammic. You're looking at actual photographs of people who look like what they look like. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Gestures there. But the important thing about television, it is light through. And what that means is, as light is reflected off the movie, it is a state of reflection, but the television and the cathode ray tube is an emission, an emitting of light. That's the simplest way to describe it. Now, the other factor is that the television environment is something that's simultaneous. Everybody can engage in the content at the same time. But if you go to a theater, only the 20 to 200 people in the theater can experience the content.
Another thing is, if you put television programming on tape, you can experience at any time, not when someone else decides.
That's right. That starts to create electric autonomy, which is the hidden ground to the aesthetic of the Millennium Madness and the chaos, is that all these mythic stages, it's another meaning of Lockdown Bob Rule, all the mythic technological environments are no longer controlling people. In a sense, it's no longer the medium is the message, electric autonomy is the message. Every one of us wears all these environments. So yes, we are free.
Let me go to something else here, because we still don't have any other callers, 985-5735. You know, there used to be, in the 30s, the screens actually had small glass beads on them, which they don't anymore. Now, I've been told that this actually created something that looked ethereal. These images seem to be, excuse me a minute, suspended in space. And the later screens, they are not like that. They are much more flat and more do you understand what I'm trying to say here?
Yeah.
Now, on some TVs, the new TVs, you will not be projected into. It's like the LED-style screens, as well as the projection screens, the oversized TV, which are just like movies.
That's right. That's why Marshall always recommended, Marshall McLuhan in the 60s, to increase the lines of TV on the screen so that you will have a stronger reflection of the movie effect and have a sense of retrieving the literate effects of movies versus the total low-definition effect of the TV screen.
Well, this is HDTV.
So we're going to have retrieval visual values and electric autonomy on the left hemisphere sense of it with high-definition television. You're right.
Okay, now we got a couple of calls. Let's go to a call. You're on the air.
Yeah, well, another thing about the television is, as opposed to film, is that the screen is so small that it doesn't allow your eyes to move enough, and it'll put you in an alpha state just naturally. Physiologically.
Yeah, you're right. Tennis, the watching of the ball go back and forth in the tennis game is a retrieval of the movie medium effect. You're right. The dyslexic effect comes from TV. It stops the movement of the eyeball. You're right.
I guess that was it. Let's go on to another caller here. You're on the air. Hello.
Hi. Yeah, I'd like to ask Bob what he thinks is going to happen to books and novels.
Who?
Books and novels, like in the upcoming years.
Nothing is old under the sun. They used to say McLuhan was wrong because they said the book was obsolete. What he meant by obsolete was obsolescence. It was prominent. When something becomes greatly expanded, it's obsolete. So if it works, it's obsolete. If it's obsolete, it works. So we're going to have floods of visual space dumped on us, and we've had that the last 30 years,
uh-huh.
Which confused people's understanding of McLuhan's maxim. The point is that books and novels don't have a perceptual effect on us as a new environment like they did in 1500 to 1600.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, we will always have every medium. That's why we can't get rid of the IMF and the international bankers. The visual medium of money will always be there as part of tetrad management, and so will books and novels. But in general, we'll move into virtual reality, and learning how to read will be an acquired specialty like falcon hunting.
Hmm.
Yeah, it'll be there.
Well, thanks a lot.
Well, books feel nice in your hands, too.
That's right. That's another characteristic of books. They are actually tactile. In reference to your question, was it? You just said about the smallness of the television.
That was two callers ago.
The portability and smallness of the television is complemented by the portability of the paperback. And so, as Marsh used to say, he did not find the paperback a visual medium. It was a tactile medium for him. And, yes, that's an important effect.
Okay, we got another call. You're on the air.
Hello.
Yes.
Good morning.
Thank you.
Is it Bob? Yep.
I can hear something wrong with my phone. Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yes, Rob, I listen to KPFK once a while when I'm not busy. One time, for fun of it, I opened a World Peace, Justice and Progress organization and tried to call a president and leaders and church people, trying to tell them to stop the important things, you know, like killing people in Salvador, dealing with the wise people like Iranians. So teaching America for thousands of years. Listen to old father. That's the things I used to say.
Right. They're not in, those people, you're calling the wrong people. They're not in control. Bill Clinton is nowhere near the control that's necessary.
Well, it's a corporation, so far I understood. But, see, I tried to have a solution since I always didn't get the money because I do these kind of things. See, my mother was the granddaughter of Chief of Bakhtir, the owner of Persian Oil, and they controlled the country until they get rid of him. Because they're chiefs, they don't sell the country. This is a story.
Yeah, the and control is
my name
state.
Is Mudaris, is Ayatollah Mudaris. 1917, English people get rid of it. He's a hero. He was Gandhi, not like a stupid one we got recently.
Right.
So I listen to important people and I call them, like ex-CIA people that Mary, her name was. I told her, your name is Maryam. ABCD is not correct. You guys don't speak in correct English. It's Aleph, Beth, Seh, Dal. Language come from Iran and India 7,000 years ago.
That's so anyway, right, but it was important. The phonetic alphabet is improvised by the Greek inventors that changed the meaning for the alphabet before that.
Yeah, went from like we have 2,000 years building, phony. They learned from Iranian how to put the arch.
You're talking the content, the content comes from Africa.
You know how it is. Even Jesus is always blonde, he's supposed to be my color. Anyway, 98% of course.
Yeah, yes, content is, the original content is Africa.
This but it was you, because I didn't hear from you too much, and I don't know, you're underground organization things, or you do peace and justice, or...
Yeah, I that's called Tetra Management. I've created the... basically, the last 5 years that you've heard about on the media and all the effects and inventions and AIDS research was controlled and implemented by myself. It's hard to believe, but the world is in the state now where Orpheus can tune the world. El Shankar gave Zappa a plaster bust of Apollo for his birthday. And the point is, that's acoustic space. He's Apollo acoustic space, but I'm the Apollo Orpheus tuner of the world on the tactile, more comprehensive level.
Bob, I got a friend, he always said, talk to me hamburger language. He was
hamburger? That's Captain Beefheart. There are 40 people in the world, and 5 of them are hamburgers.
I used to call Roy a few times. And,
yeah, Roy will probably feature me a lot on the show after everybody responds to this dialogue.
Yeah, and I'm not too familiar with all organizations, since I'm busy also defending all the world instead of just Iranians. See, I'm Persian, whatever.
Okay, it looks like time's up for you.
Okay,
bye. Gotta go.
Here we go, another caller. You're on the air.
Yes, you forgot one ultimate icon whose birthday is today, and that's Bob Hope, and I think he probably would transcend many generations, and where does he fit in all this?
Well, he's the real anti-Bob.
Yeah, for
that's
sure.
Right. Bob Hope is an agent of the Vatican. We know that Archbishop Marcink has visited him in the middle of the P2 scandals in the early 80s. Just a minute. What, Connie? I thought somebody yelled. Just a second. So, Bob Hope is used by Reverend Stang in the Book of the Subgenius. Bob is our hope. Hope is our Bob. Certainly, I'm glad you mentioned him, but, you know, he is the pink comedian of all time.
And don't forget, our president comes from hope.
Ah, very good, very good. And hope is what we
eternal
all need today, and certainly you're
like
going to get the most potent from me.
Yeah, well, good luck on today, and I really appreciate your dialogue this afternoon.
Thank you very much.
Okay, good one.
Do you have a question? There's someone here has a question, Dave. How can we acousticize tetrad management? The question is, how can we acousticize tetrad management? That is what we're doing right now. Tetrad management is involved in implementing the effects of all mixed corporate media, but we're using the bias of telephone and radio right now, so we're extending the ear. This is acousticizing tetrad management, the complex clairvoyant effects of me interacting on May 29th in this area, and remember, it's also being picked up by satellite for the whole world. That is what we're achieving today.
Let me ask you another one. How come I prefer radio to television?
Because you're semi-literate. Even literate.
Wait a minute. Since I produce both.
Yeah, I know. But you prefer radio because you're about 40 years old or so. You come out of the 40s and 50s. You were basically literized before you were TV sodomized. And the effect of radio, even though it's an acoustic environment, it's high definition, so it has a visual effect.
There's
so
another. There's
that's
another
why
reason.
You are preferring radio.
Well, there's another reason, and maybe you'd like to comment on this.
The dialogue aspect is also.
Well, I can do an entire radio production myself. But with television, if I'm the talent, I also have to have a camera person, a switcher, an audio person, someone to do...
Right, so radio gives you the sensation of electric autonomy more.
That's right.
Yep.
Okay, we got another caller here. Let's see, which one called first? I'm going to try this one. You're on the air.
Hello.
Yes. You're on the air with Tim Leary.
Yes, yes, Bob. I'd like to talk to Bob, please.
Yeah, he's right here.
My question is... what is your comment on the physics of room temperature superconductivity as a metaphor for the coming paradigm shift in energy?
That's very important because that is the basic metaphor that Marshall used. He called media hot and cool, hot and cold. Okay, so room temperature was what he was talking about. You change the sensory typology with a different medium. Now, superconductivity is moving at the speed of light. And what was the last phrase?
The coming paradigm shift in energy consumption and use.
Yes, the paradigm shift is a figure for the ground. My charts illustrate the reasons for the various conceptual paradigm shifts, and we've had many since 1945. On energy, the real paradigm shift, as advocated by Lyndon LaRouche, and he's on the right track despite what William Irwin Thompson says, is fusion energy. Fusion energy is going to give us incredible electric autonomy.
That's what Mike O'Dell used to say.
Fusion. Which one?
Cold fusion.
You've seen cold fusion?
Yeah, the Utah experiment is real. The Japanese proved it last year. It's being suppressed by Tom Tichet and the pinks in the media about what is happening around the universities in the world, proving cold fusion, and we're going to have it within 7 years.
Okay, that's, wait a minute. I'm going to,
right,
we're going to have to go.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, so anybody wants to send a self-addressed stamped envelope for the chart, write to Dave Porter.
At KPFK.
Goodbye.
Thank you.
And thank you, Bob. Let's do this again sometime.
Okay, Dave, I'll hold you to that. Maybe it may take another 10 years, but you got to do it one more time because you just said it.
Well, it hasn't been 10 years since we first contacted.
That's right, and thank you for broadcasting my predictions. They were real. It's on the public record. Nobody else would do it, and the world loves the funny. I would certainly not publicize it.
Phony. Phony. Not funny. Phony.
That's Television Kills Telephony in Brothers Brawl, page 52 of Finnegan's Wake.
Okay, take care, Bob.
Thank you, Dave.
Bye. And that was Bob Dobbs. And this is David Porter with Genesis of Music. Stay tuned for John Davis. And I'll be back next week, Bill Mitchell at 7:30.